Thanks, Robert, for the introduction, and thanks also for putting together this workshop, and thanks to the other organizers as well. I'm interested in absolutely all of these topics, so I was very keen to come along to this workshop. What I'm going to talk about today is joint work with Sam Roberts. Sam was a PhD student at University of Sydney, so you all know what that means when I say joint work with Sam. That means this is Sam's work. It also connects in, I think, a fair bit with what Sam's going to talk about on Thursday. So I'm thinking of this as a bit of an introduction to what we were thinking about while we were working together on this project in terms of thermal stability of these resources. I'm going to try to sort of set that introduction, give some highlights of our results, and try to get to some of the open questions. And so that's what I really want to get to, is some open questions at the end of my talk that I'm hoping will inspire some discussions as the week goes on. So a lot of the details that I'm going to talk about here are in this paper that's on the archive and in Referee Hell. And it's in the discussion sections at the end that I think, will match up with what I'm going to talk about today. Right, and I have to click through. We couldn't get the dongles to work. Right, so in trying to get sort of the vibe of this workshop, or at least one of the vibes, this is my grasp at it, or at part of it. Is there something to be gained by looking at quantum information processing, quantum computation, from the perspective of systems that allow us to do interesting quantum computations are in some sense like an exotic quantum phase? And so there's a question mark there, because like, does that question even make sense? How do you phrase that question more precisely? And I think that's what a lot of this work at this workshop's about. Precisely what do we mean when we say that a phase of matter can be a resource for something interesting in a quantum computational sense? What exactly is it that characterizes those interesting phases, if there are many of them? So that's really, I think, a driving principle in, at least in my own research over the now more than a decade, I think, is even just trying to formulate the question properly. In what sense can we think of quantum computational resources as being like a phase of matter? I recognize it's a broad audience, so let me start with some very, very high-level general statements. First one, I'll say first something about topological order, then something about SPT order. So why are we so interested in topological order from a quantum computing perspective? Well, it's really this miracle of topological codes. If you can design a system with a spectrum that looks a bit like this, plus some stuff that you can't so easily draw, the spectrum that's associated with the topologically ordered model, what do you have in that? Well, there's a degenerate ground space. And that's great, because you think, well, that's where I could put some quantum information. If it's in a ground space, that means you don't have any relaxation. If it's strictly degenerate, that means you also have no dephasing. Now, if you had an accidental degeneracy, you'd be worried about fluctuations that that break that degeneracy and cause dephasing. But if we could somehow protect that degeneracy, and that's what topological models do, they very strongly protect that degeneracy and resist dephasing as well. So if you're an experimentalist trying to design a qubit and somebody says, I have an idea for a qubit, it has no relaxation and no dephasing, it sounds like a dream. There are still errors. You might worry about exciting things to higher energy levels. Well, those processes are suppressed by an energy gap to those excitations. So we're looking at gapped models. That doesn't mean you have to cool the system down to a temperature sort of below that gap, but then, you know, the more you cool it, you just keep gaining and gaining in terms of suppressing those errors. And then on top of that, even if those excitations occur, even if you accidentally created an excited state in your system, potentially you may be able to do something and put it back, not only in the ground space, but put it back in the right ground space. So we can correct in such models. It's everything you want in a code. And on top of that, once you work out details like thresholds and so on, and how do I actually do gates, there's just so many possibilities. So it's an absolutely, you know, natural and miraculous situation where this type of phase, this type of quantum material that you might go out in nature and look for or try to design, it almost seems to be made for doing quantum computing, for storing quantum information. There is some problems, though. So topological order really is a ground state phenomena. With just about everything that we know, and I'll elaborate on this later, that quantum information is not stable on its own. So you really have to do active error correction. If you let errors, excitations occur in our system and then you leave them alone for some time, they're going to cause problems down the road. You have to get in there and actively keep returning things back to the ground space, the code space, with active error correction in order to keep quantum information protected there. And that, once you start doing the numbers on using such codes for quantum computation, that's actually where you're spending all your time, is doing quantum error correction. It'd be great if you could somehow get some more stability out of there, and this will be the topic of this talk, and we'll get into the details, but really this idea of that not being stable is quite connected to this topological order really being a zero temperature phenomena, and that most of the topological models that we know and love are not, they don't have any sort of non-zero temperature stability to them. Connected. Okay, but that's just a bit of introduction into topological order. Much more recently, people are also very interested in this idea of symmetry-protected topological order. And what is that? Sometimes we just call it SPT order. That is a restricted form. It's probably a horrible statement to make. It's not really a restricted form of topological order. It is a restricted form of something that looks a lot like topological order. Topological order is something where you are robust under all local perturbations, and SPT order is you're robust under all local perturbations that obey some sort of symmetry. So it can give you a lot of the desirable properties of a topologically ordered system, but by looking at this SPT order, there's actually a much richer and broader range of phenomena that you can explore. And so when people get excited about Majorana fermions for quantum computation or topological insulators, they're actually, these people sort of talk about them like they're topological, they're actually SPT ordered models. There are symmetries which are protecting the exotic properties of those systems. And as we'll hear about, even in the next talk by Akimasa, and I stole this from one of Akimasa's papers, these types of phases can also be computational resources. Now, I'm not going to get into that into this talk, but that is something you'll hear about this week. Topologically ordered models are very useful for protecting quantum information and thinking of building quantum computers with them. SPT ordered models are also very, very much investigated as resources for quantum computation. This is also very much like the last slide, that SPT order is very much a ground state property. And I don't think people have, in these settings of computational resources, I don't think we've studied enough about exactly what do those excitations out of the ground space do to affect the various schemes in which we think about using them. So that's an important question that we have to ask, but, you know, if I suspect the answer will be that these schemes will require some sort of active correction if you are allowed to excite out of these ground states. Right, okay, so that gets me to the main question of this talk and trying to formulate, trying to pin down this very broad question I set at the beginning. We've seen there two examples of resourceful quantum states, resourceful quantum phases. And my question is, can we find ones that are thermally stable, where the properties that we're interested in persist even to some non-zero temperature? Now, there's many reasons to want that. One is, I mean, it's a fundamental question. Are these things strictly zero temperature properties, or can we imagine some sort of Gibbs state having these exotic resource properties that we've been studying? And also more practically, the idea of having stable thermal stability is very much related to whether or not you need to do active error correction in order to keep these resources resourceful. So that's the question that I want to pose today. We have an example, a good example of a resourceful quantum phase that you might think of using for quantum computation, and that is also thermally stable, is the 4D toric code. So without going into the details of it, this is a model which has those desirable properties of a topologically ordered model I mentioned before. You have that degenerate ground state where I can encode information. It's very protected against dephasing and no relaxation. You do worry about what are the excitations and what will they do. The excitations in this model are sort of a bit exotic, unlike some of the more standard examples that we know in two dimensions. The excitations in this model end up forming loops instead of point-like objects. And those loops require increasing energy to grow. You can check that this model, because of that confinement of those loop-like excitations, actually has a finite temperature phase transition. And by some notion of what is topological order, you know, that topological order then persists right up in increasing temperature right up to that finite temperature phase transition. So not only could you say that the ground state of this model is a resource for quantum computation, I can use it as a quantum memory, I can even take the Gibbs state at some non-zero temperature, provided that temperature is low enough, and say, oh, that's still pretty good. So that's an example of the type of thing I'm looking for, except the problem, of course, is this is a four-dimensional phase, and we would love to see some examples in lower dimensions. But there are some problems. Basically, some no-go results that say, well, what you're looking for is going to be hard. So the first of which, Hastings in 2011 sort of gave at least a definition of what it could mean to have topological ordering in a Gibbs state, proved that there are no 2D topological models built out of commuting projector Hamiltonians that are thermally stable, that are going to have that property that you saw for the 4D code. Now, that's a sort of a rigorous proof for those types of Hamiltonians. Really, the result people expect to be much, the applicability of that result we sort of expect to be much broader. So what he relied on in that proof is that, okay, in all of these 2D models with commuting projector Hamiltonians, we get these point-like excitations, And because of the existence of point-like excitations in that model, I can prove that they're not thermally stable. That's sort of what he did. So point-like excitations is, it's almost a defining property of 2D topological order. It's present not just in models with commuting projector Hamiltonians, but just about anything you can imagine that's a 2D topologically ordered model has that property, and we expect this sort of no-go result to apply. So you can almost interpret that first result as saying you can't have what you want in 2D topologically, with 2D topological order. You can't have thermal stability. You might ask a similar question about SPT ordering. Can I have SPT ordering persist a non-zero temperature? And this is something we thought about with Benny and Alex. The answer there is also no. And it's the scope of that result is a bit different. SPT order, what it requires that symmetry, and for a specific type of symmetry, that is a global on-site symmetry, in any dimension, the fact that it's a global on-site symmetry that's defining that SPT order basically means you have point-like excitations in no matter what dimension you're in. And that allows us to prove that you can't have such an SPT ordered phase persist to non-zero temperature in any dimension. So another no-go result. So it sort of looks like, well, okay, if you're happy to go to 4D, then you can have maybe thermal topological order, but you're not going to get it in 2D, 3D, we don't quite know what's going on. SPT, it looks like it's quite ruled out. That really seems actually quite negative. And it's funny, when you talk to experimentalists working on topological quantum computing, they sort of know this and they're also sort of surprised. Like, they're like, yeah, okay, you know, we talk about how stable all of these topological things are, but really, to work with those phases, we recognize we're going to have to cool those systems down to way below the gap. You know, we're going to be in a dilution fridge forever, and any sort of excitation in our system is going to be considered an error. And that really sort of contrasts with, you know, all the talk about, oh, if we can make topological quantum computers, they're so robust to all, you know, all the things that can go wrong, but one excitation in the system is in a sense enough to screw things up, unless you have some way of doing active error correction. And if you do, you're going to have to do that active error correction all the time. There is no thermal stability in any of these approaches we have at the moment to topological quantum computing. And similar holds for SPT ordering. Okay, so those are some pretty powerful no-go results. But I hope people share my view on no-go results. No-go theorems are there to help you find the way around them. It's true. I mean, we want the solution, and the no-go results are helping us to just sort of say, well, that way's not going to work. So you got to try something else. Since it's the first talk of the workshop, I'm going to take sort of like a different approach to how we're going to get around this. Let's try just doing, I mean, what you might actually do in your first attempt, get around a no-go result. Just start doing some silly things. Just start playing with the problem and let's see what we can do. So let's play a bit with symmetry and topology for a moment. We'll get to some positive results, but along the way, I'm going to do some things that are silly, and I think we'll learn something also by why they're silly in terms of what we don't want. Okay. So the idea here is we're going to start thinking about, let's look at how symmetry can maybe play a role in defining thermally stable topological order. That's going to be my focus. Let's take a model that we know and love, the 2D toric code or surface code, which is defined with our Z-type stabilizers. I'll use the magnetic and electric flux language a bit, so this is almost just to remind you which one is which. Z-type stabilizers are checking for magnetic flux or magnetic charge. X-type stabilizers for electric charge. Okay, so the torque code is, you know, Hamiltonian is minus the sum of all those stabilizers. That model falls within Hastings' definition. That model has no thermal stability. You turn up the temperature on the torque code to anything, and that ordering is gone. Here's my doing something silly. Let's apply symmetry. Let me say that the symmetry is all of the stabilizers of that model. So saying that I'm going to enforce that symmetry is just saying I'm going to be in the plus one eigenstate of all of those stabilizers. So what does that give you? Well, that's a very strong symmetry, and what it gives you is a model where you can't have errors. Errors are not symmetric. So I've just ruled them out. I've banished errors from my model. Okay, that's good. But in some sense, I've also made the model trivial. The model is now just the code space where everything's degenerate. There are no excitations. As a model, it's somewhat trivial. And it's also not even really useful because the quantum information that is in that model, if I'm strictly enforcing that symmetry, is in a sense now locked, that I can't figure out how to do any gates, at least not with local moves, because there are no local moves I can do. They are all forbidden by this symmetry. Okay, so that's, like I said, that's just me being silly. You can't enforce that type of symmetry. It makes your model completely trivial, you can't do anything as a result. Okay, so what we want to do next is, okay, let's try to do something a bit less silly. We want the model to be non-trivial. We want some excitations. What kind of properties of excitations do we want in order to keep things stable, thermally stable? So here, let me just take a brief moment and remind you what you might do in the classical case. Let's take some easing spins, thinking of them as subject to some, coupling that favors alignment of neighboring spins. So a standard easing model. Now, let's think about the 1D easing chain. Degenerate ground state, all the spins up, all the spins down. Those are both ground states. And what are the excitations in this model? Well, I can flip a spin, and that costs an energy cost here and here because I have two sort of frustrated neighboring terms. I can flip two spins that actually has the same energy. I recognize sort of that I think of the excitations in this model as associated with the domain walls between, where neighbors are flipped. So there's a domain wall here and a domain wall there. There's sort of now point-like excitations in this model. Those point-like excitations are deconfined. It costs no energy for them to move around. And that is very directly related to the fact that this model has no Curie temperature. It has no ordering above T equals zero. And it's a very different story if we go to the 2D easing model. Again, let's think about the doubly degenerate ground state, all spins up or all spins down. Let's think about flipping a spin that frustrates, a cost and energy because this term, this term, this term, this term are anti-aligned. I try to grow that error, and now I see that my domain walls here, the things that separate up from down, are loop-like. They define sort of the boundary here, and they have an energy cost that depends on how long that loop is. So there is tension in those excitations. They're not point-like, they're loop-like. They have increasing energy as they grow. We say that they are confined. And yeah, so those areas cost more to grow in size. So you look at, you know, what's the Gibbs state? It's going to have it's going to suppress those terms with very large loops. And you'll find in this model that you do get a non-zero Curie temperature, that this model has some stability. So there's our little hint from classical physics as to what, okay, we want a non-trivial spectrum. We don't want to do something silly where we just rule out all excitations. We want to have some excitations in our model and make it non-trivial, but we need those excitations probably to be confined. Maybe there's some more exotic solution, but this is a natural thing to look for, confinement. Silly idea number two. Okay, let's maybe slightly less silly, but still silly. Let's look at the 3D toric code. I haven't attempted to draw a picture of it. The 3D toric code has electric and magnetic excitations just like the 2D ones, but unlike 2D, in the 3D toric code, there's a big difference between the form of electric and magnetic excitations. Electric excitations are point-like and deconfined. Magnetic excitations are loop-like and confined. So you might think, silly idea number two, okay, well, we've got one type of excitation, which we're sort of fine with. It could have potentially a Curie temperature associated with those magnetic charges. But the electric charges, they're point-like, they're a problem. Let's use a symmetry to get rid of them. So the symmetry to get rid of electric charges would be to enforce just these vertex operators in the 3D toric code. So let's enforce that symmetry. We have a non-trivial model now. In fact, it's a well-studied model. The model you get when you enforce that symmetry is is Ising lattice gauge theory. It's an Ising lattice gauge model. A model where, you know, it's almost a canonical example, the textbook example of where you see confinement. You see those magnetic charges, which are loop-like, being confined. You do see a Curie temperature in that model. You're like, oh, great, I've got a non-trivial model. I can protect my information in this. It's still got all the ground state degeneracy of that original 3D toric code. I don't have to worry about those point-like charges anymore. I've removed them with the symmetry. Okay, so that sounds good. You're still very restricted in what you can do. Now, remember in the 2D toric code where I enforced all the stabilizers, you couldn't do anything. Well, now you can do some things with that logical information, but I can't do a logical Z operation with local moves. I still can't fully manipulate that quantum information. So, the lesson that we're learning from these silly ideas is we shouldn't be using symmetry to try to banish our point-like excitations. Because when we do that, we're also crippling our ability to manipulate that model. We're restricting our ability to do logical operations. So what we want to do is to say, can I use the symmetry in a different way? Can I use it to confine what was previously deconfined, to change the energetics rather than, this is changing the energetics, but rather than just banishing terms, I wanna alter terms. When did I start? How long do I have?
You started, you're about half an hour into your talk, not quite.
Okay, and I have?
You have 10 minutes plus 5 minutes questions, basically.
Okay, good. So here's now, this is sort of summarizing now an approach. And as I said, I'm not advocating this is the only approach, but let's now say we have a specific example where we feel we've made some progress on this. Let me outline what that is. We have, we're looking at a 3D topological model. In general, when you look at 3D topological codes, there's some sense in which the quantum information is on the boundary. And the general property that you can see in a bunch of 3D topological models is that you might have some confinement, string-like or loop-like excitations in the bulk, But on the boundary where that quantum information resides, you have deconfined excitations, and that's why you still have to do active error correction. So our goal here, as I said, we're trying to find a way to change the energetics in order to confine what was deconfined. So now our goal is, can we take those deconfined excitations on the boundary and couple them to the bulk where we have confinement, and maybe that will get us somewhere. Okay, what we're going to use in our example is, so we're looking at topologically ordered models in 3D. We're trying to protect that quantum information, which is in some sense on the boundary, and we're going to do so by adding a symmetry to the model, and in particular, thinking about how it acts on the bulk, and we need something more than the on-site symmetries that we studied before and that we worked out don't have any thermal stability. We need a symmetry that could give us thermal stability, and that's a new form of symmetry, this one-form symmetry. So what is a one-form symmetry? I should go through this somewhat quickly, but it is, instead of the usual symmetry we think about, which like, you know, flip every single spin in your model, now we think of surfaces in the model, closed surfaces, and we think of applying a symmetry on that surface. And then, of course, that symmetry has to apply to any choice of surface that you pick. So I always think of it as a bit like a Gauss law type construction on topological charge. And maybe I'll just gloss over the details here a bit, and I've put up some references, but really, I really have to acknowledge that it was Benny's result who really, I think, showed us how to take these rather technical ideas out of that string theory community and start applying them to spin lattice models and thinking about what effect the one-form symmetries and higher-form symmetries would have on spin lattice models.
Sorry, when you say symmetry, you mean a gauge symmetry, which kind of has to be preserved, or just a symmetry you impose on the interactions?
A symmetry, I mean, in a sense of, we want a Hamiltonian, which commutes with that symmetry, and I'm considering now phases as defined, you know, connected by that Hamiltonian, only through operations that respect the symmetry.
To allow for states which practice.
Yes. Yes.
Fifteen
minutes from now, including questions.
Including questions.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
So, okay. Don't want to be too strict. We can go over time a little bit.
Okay. Okay, this is for you, Robert, because I want to thank you. I'm gonna apply this to a we're gonna apply this to a very specific model, and it has been a model that has been, I think, hugely influencing in my own research. This model going back to 2004. I'm going to explain it in a bit more detail, but this is just absolutely a great canonical, you know, example of a 3D lattice model, which has aspects of topology. It has aspects of SPT order. I think, at least I'm only now sort of understanding really how to look at this model. But it was this work that Robert and his colleagues did quite some time ago, which really sort of pointed out that you can have, from the quantum resource perspective, some thermal stability in a spin lattice model in 3D. And that's really driven some of our research questions. You gave me more time, but I'm still going to try to go quickly. We have a model on a cubic lattice, and we're going to put blue qubits on, so the cubic lattice is the dotted lines, blue qubits on the edges and green qubits on the faces. So they're sort of like primal and dual in some sense. In this so-called RBH model, it's like a cluster state model, a 3D cluster state model. We're going to put these cluster stabilizer terms on, so on every primal qubit is connected to four dual qubits. Every dual qubit is connected to four primal qubits, and so all of your Hamiltonian terms on the primal and dual sublattices, well, they cross both lattices, they sort of look like this, these five-body interactions. There's a natural symmetry in this model, a natural one-form symmetry in this model, that is all closed surfaces of X's. And so there's a very small one, a little bubble of X's, in that case, on the dual lattice. You can also have them on the primal lattice. And any closed surface of X's is a symmetry of that model. So that's going to be the one-form symmetry which we're going to be considering. So you can consider this RBH model, and I'm going to also contrast it with sort of a trivial paramagnetic model. And here's an important point about both these models and asymmetry. So let's consider enforcing this one-form symmetry in the RBH model or on this trivial model. They both commute with that symmetry. If I enforce that symmetry, a property of one-form symmetries is that it makes your excitations string-like or loop-like. Both models have some, have a non-degenerate ground space. Low energy excitations are strings of Zs that have tension. And the symmetry is forbidding open strings. It's demanding that those strings are closed, and it's giving you confinement. So first point here is that the symmetry is playing this first role of giving us confinement in the bulk, and that really has nothing to do with this cluster model. It works just as well if you apply it to this trivial paramagnet model. A property of one-form symmetries is it gives you one-dimensional excitations, you'll get confinement. So that's one aspect of the symmetry that we're going to use, but there's more. We're going to pick some boundary conditions on this model in order to be able to explore its topological aspects. Let me first of all tell you about all the boundaries except this front face. We're going to put some boundaries on the side that allow primal strings to condense, and by that meaning that if you had a loop acting on the primal qubits, that's an excitation, I could just bring it up to that primal boundary and it could just absorb it. And the bottom and top will be boundaries where dual strings can condense. And at the back is this sink where all of the excitations can condense. So I haven't defined what's going on the front, but here is the specific, here's an example of a specific small lattice which has the right faces on the side. And on the front, you can almost see it looks like I have something that's a bit like the surface code. And so let's look at that. You can define some sort of effective boundary operators on that front surface, and you can say, okay, I can put on whatever Hamiltonian I want. Let's put on a surface code type Hamiltonian. There's the vertex terms, there's the plaquette terms, and then here would be sort of, if I was talking about the surface code, I would say here's a logical X operator and a logical Z operator of the surface code that commute with those Hamiltonian terms. So there is, with this choice of boundary conditions on the front, that front is the boundary theory is very much like the surface code. It's got a ground state degeneracy, it encodes a qubit. This is an example of what I was saying before in a 3D topologically ordered model. You can sort of think of the encoded information as on the boundary. Here's a specific example with the right boundary conditions such that that quantum information encoded on the boundary is very explicitly in a surface code on the front. So this would be, if we didn't consider the symmetry, this would just be another example of a 3D topologically ordered model where, yes, we can think of information encoded on a boundary. If we add the symmetry, things get more interesting. We've already seen that the symmetry does one thing for us. It's giving us confinement in the bulk, but now we're going to use it for something else, something that's independent. So let's look at these two different models that I proposed for the bulk. That I said we were going to consider this trivial paramagnet. And now let's consider what's happening not only in the bulk, but also on the boundary. The one-form symmetry confines excitations in the bulk. That's just a generic property of having that one-form symmetry. If we looked at that bulk ordering from the perspective of, is there any SPT ordering? No, it's actually a trivial model from the perspective of SPT ordering. That boundary, that torque, that surface code Hamiltonian we put on the boundary, it's topologically ordered, has a degenerate ground space, but it looks like it's completely decoupled from the bulk. So it has point-like excitations on that boundary that are deconfined, even with that symmetry. And as a result, you're not going to get any thermal stability in that model. Even though you have confinement in the bulk, that boundary is just completely decoupled from that bulk. It looks like a normal 2D surface code. And it's got the exact same properties from the perspective of thermal ordering of the 2D surface code. Now let's contrast that with putting this different model in the bulk, this RBH model, with these clustered type terms. Again, the symmetry says, if I enforce that symmetry, I have confined excitations in the bulk. I always get that. But there's more. On top of that, you can check that bulk ordering is SPT non-trivial. That if I enforce that symmetry, I'm not going to be able to convert that bulk state to a trivial state using a constant depth local symmetry respecting circuit. So there's something very different. Along with just the symmetry giving confinement in both models, this model from the perspective of the symmetry is quite different from this model. How is it different? Well, that boundary theory that looks like the surface code, it still, in a sense, it looks like the surface code that it has a degenerate ground space. We can encode a qubit, has those logical operators. But now that boundary theory is anomalous. This is the type of boundary theory that you can't get without it being connected to a 3D bulk. And what do I mean by being anomalous, SET ordered? The way I think of that as being and sort of instantiated is that the point-like excitations that we normally associate with that boundary are tied to bulk strings. In fact, they terminate bulk strings that can end on that boundary. You couldn't get that in this case, but you get that over here as a direct result of that non-trivial SPT ordering in the bulk. You have tied the boundary theory to it in a very non-trivial way, which has confined your point-like excitations on the boundary. And that means that this model has a thermally stable topological ordering on the boundary. You can increase the temperature. It looks like the surface code on the boundary, but because it's connected to the bulk, it actually, that topological order persists to non-zero temperature.
Does that mean they come in pairs, or can you have a string that comes from the inside?
Maybe this picture sort of helps in thinking about now, how do I, I can also do logical operations on this. So remember when I added that silly symmetry to the surface code and force all the stabilizers, it locked me out of manipulating that encoded information. Now I'm not. There's a big energy cost. I've got to create strings that sort of are the size of the lattice. But that's good because the environment's not going to have the energy to do that. I've got to go in, create these strings, and I can do logical X operations one way, logical Z operations the other way on the dual lattice. I can throw some residual energy into my sink to dispose of it, and I can manipulate that quantum information on the boundary. Okay, so I'm down to just my sort of last two now, more discussion slides. Here is where I'm going to welcome if you have questions and things like that and want to jump in. So what have we seen here? I want to emphasize that the symmetry in this model really played a double role. By having that one-form symmetry that gave us confinement, but that by itself is sort of boring. as we saw in the trivial paramagnet example. There was another thing that the symmetry did. It made that bulk non-trivial SPT ordering. This is a very different phase than the trivial paramagnet. And the result of that sort of gave this coupling to the bulk theory that provided the bulk theory with properties that you would think should not exist in a normal two-dimensional model. So that's very exciting. It gives us a hint that these one-form symmetric SPT phases in 3D can lead to thermal stability. Now one would look at a whole list of like Walker-Wang models and things like that, where you might be able to say, can I identify a one-form symmetry in that model, and can I not only show confinement in the bulk, which is a generic property of those Walker-Wang models, but can I find a way of coupling it non-trivially to the boundary? It was necessary in this to go beyond the on-site symmetries. We had to go to the higher form symmetries because of that no-go result. If it was just on-site symmetries, that's not giving you the confinement. So that was, as I said, the least interesting aspect of the symmetry, but a necessary one nonetheless. You needed that confinement. Maybe, you know, you get confinement in these Walker-Wang models without having to enforce a one-form symmetry. So maybe there's a way around that. I'd like to understand that better. And my final question is really, okay, well, these one-form symmetries are quite strong and quite odd, maybe. I want to ask if they can be emergent. And so that's really my last slide. Let me just throw up my wild speculation for all of you to criticize. First of all, what do I mean by emergent symmetries? We're very interested in topological models, which, although we're taking specific, you know, spin lattice examples of them, we're really trying to talk about some generic properties of a phase at low temperature, which means we're not interested in a short-range microscopic behavior. We're just interested in these topological properties you get when you zoom right out. So topological models are meant to be, and the ones we're considering are meant to be low-energy effective theories, where these symmetries that are associated with these topological charge conservation laws, they appear effectively at low temperature once you look at things at long range. So this whole idea has, I think, a pretty solid foundation in 2D models. We understand what all that means, a little less so in higher dimension. And here's sort of, the question you might ask me, you're like, okay, well, why would I think, okay, what do I mean when I say the symmetry is emergent? I'm saying if you define a topological model as a low energy effective theory out of something that is, got some microscopic description that ultimately you don't care that much about, maybe you'll find in that low energy theory, you don't have to enforce a symmetry. It's just there for you. We see that in the torque code. We see that the fact that charges always come in pairs is just an inherent property of the torque code that's connected to the fact that it is a topologically ordered, you know, low energy theory, and that, you know, that's tied right in with this very definition of what it means to be that topologically ordered model, is that we have that conservation law on charge for excitations. Can we have that same type of thing happen with a one-form symmetry, that we look at the low-energy effective theory of a model and we find, oh, you have to have this one-form symmetry. All of the excitations obey it. So why would I think that could happen? Much like the 2D case, we still expect, even if you get these extended objects for topological charge in higher dimensional topological theories, string-like and loop-like excitations, we still have this notion that there is topological conservation laws associated with them. And in fact, it's these Gauss's law type symmetries that are, that, you know, how I used to describe those one-form symmetry actions. It's those Gauss's law symmetries that sort of are a good way of capturing that notion of a conservation law for the extended topological charge. So maybe, you know, I put up here an example of this would be like gauge flux conservation in the gauge color code, meaning, you know, the hope would be a model where when I do error correction in the gauge color code, I don't have to go in and enforce gauge flux conservation, that it's automatically there in the model, that all the excitations in that model satisfy a priori gauge flux conservation because of the nature of their topological excitations. I'd be very interested in discussing this week with people whether it's not just that we can find emergent higher form symmetries in higher dimensional topological models, but really whether that might actually be a defining characteristic of such things. So as you know, we have a very solid basis for topological order in 2D. There are almost sort of a range of different competing definitions for what topological order can mean in higher dimensions. To use these higher form symmetries as some sort of defining notion for topological order might help us identify models that have particular one-form symmetries as inherent emergent symmetries of that model. That's my wild speculation slide. I'd be happy to field some questions on that or chat with people during the break about some of those things. Thanks very much for your attention.
I want to ask a question about your wild speculations. And when you say that you're hopeful that some of these symmetries might emerge as a lower energy effective theory,
mm-hmm.
if I have a no-go theorem that applies to all 2D models, then why doesn't that theorem hold even if I look at the low energy effective theory? Or have you, let me try and phrase that better.
Yeah, no, but
low energy effective theory is an approximation of the true dynamics. Yeah?
Yeah.
So if the no-go theorem applies to the true dynamics and you make some approximations, get a low energy effective theory and then prove a result, doesn't that just tell me that something went wrong in the approximation?
Yeah, so we don't, I completely agree. We don't have very many no-go theorems for three-dimensional models. So, you know, the Hastings one really, I think, along with a bunch of other results, draw the line through two-dimensional topologically ordered models with thermal stability, but unless there's something very different than anything else we've seen. But for three dimensions, it's actually quite open. The real question there is, what is the nature of the excitations? Are they point-like or are they loop-like? Can we find three-dimensional topologically ordered models where all the excitations are loop-like? You know, maybe we can understand those models as looking like a more standard model with a one-form symmetry enforced, but in fact, this model just emerges that way out of some definition. That's the hope.
Good. Well, yes, Rob.
You can kind of explain the notion of a one-form symmetry through your analogy to Gauss's law. So I sort of got the sense that, you know, let's focus on not the conservation of charge, but the conservation of the, say, divergence of the field over the surface. But ultimately, those are due to the same symmetry in the field theory. So how is it a new symmetry? It's sort of a new way of expressing the conservation law.
The way I would look at it is if you had point-like excitations, there's a Gauss's law that's really just, you know, surround a region and sort of count up how much charge is in there. But what does it mean when you have string or loop-like excitations? I feel you really need to define that symmetry. So you're trying to say, okay, so say you're the underlying symmetry, the topological conservation law is I have loop-like excitations that have to close. They can't be open strings that terminate. They have to close into loops. How might I write down a symmetry that reflects that conservation law? I would say, well, think of any closed surface. So a string that punctures the surface somewhere has to come out somewhere else. So that's what a one-form symmetry is. It's saying like sort of any surface, you know, my strings have to go in one place and out somewhere else. I can't have just one puncture through it. And I can define the symmetry action that way. With point-like charges, you can define things with surfaces or also a more sort of local definition. But I don't see how you would do that with string-like objects. I feel like you need that extended symmetry to even define one that reflects this notion of my strings have to close into loops. Did I say that clearly? I probably didn't.
Let me see if I've understood. It's like Gauss's law insofar as you can express it as a constraint on, you know, what the flux through some surface would be.
Yes.
But, you know, unlike the usual Gauss's law, there might not be an equivalent description of that in terms of, you know, some local...
A local divergence or something like that. Exactly, I think.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely the picture I have in my head. I don't know if... where is Sam? Do you want to add anything to that? That's... No. Sam was working on his talk.
Okay, so if there's no very urgent questions right now, then maybe let's thank Stephen one more time.